welcome to another episode of Perky Pop. It's me, Katrina Parker, fresh back from the Gallifrey One convention, and I am happy to have a guest with me. I actually met her my first time going to Gallifrey One last year, and her name is Audra. Hi, Audra, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Katrina?
I'm doing good. Like, I just saw you like a week ago, and like, I'm already sad. It's just like, oh, it's going to be another year.
I know. The countdown starts again. That's hard.
Yeah. So why don't you tell our listeners about yourself?
Well, my name is Audra. I'm a Doctor Who fan. I'm a cosplayer. I've been cosplaying for about 10 years now. Doctor Who was actually my first adventure into cosplaying because it seemed like it had a very low barrier to entry for someone who didn't feel comfortable within the cosplay community. So I found Doctor Who to be extremely welcoming and extremely accepting. So I've never looked back.
Obviously, you probably have quirky icons within Doctor Who, but like, on like, what? Who are your own like person? Like, they can be real or fictional, like quirky icons.
So I'm definitely a child of the '80s. So first thing that comes to mind is definitely Punky Brewster. Like, I will still rock anything that is mismatched and bright colored. So yeah, she was probably my first quirky icon. But I would also say like, Lucille Ball was very influential when I was young. Carrie Fisher, definitely. Like, she's the mother of quirky.
Okay. Yeah, I love Punky, too. Like, I actually did an episode about Punky Brewster. That was pretty cool. I had, like, a friend that talked about her experience of actually having to be in the foster care system and how she connected with the show. So, yeah. So, if someone were to ask you what Doctor Who is all about, how would you describe yourself? Because some of my listeners, they don't listen to every single thing that I talk about. So I always try to give a little bit of context. But I love to hear everyone's different ways of explaining the show.
Doctor Who is just epic. I mean, with 60 years of history and change, it's just this epic tale that we're watching continue to grow and develop. And I think that's amazing. I can't think of anything else that spans that kind of history and has evolved as much as something like Doctor Who has, which is really just, it's built into the show, right? Evolution's built into the show. The main character's going to change every so often. So yeah, it's this epic sci-fi adventure.
The Doctor is this alien. Well, I don't want to give spoilers. Too many spoilers. But there's going to be some spoilers, but maybe you'll forget it. But like, they're spoilers. Like an alien, and they really like to hang out in London, modern day London, a lot, and they typically travel with a companion, and they're in a time ship that can go anywhere in time and in space. And like I just said, like the Doctor, when they are about to die or if they get like really old, they have this ability to regenerate, and meaning that every cell in their body changes and they become like a new person. They still have all the same memories, but they turn out to be like a different person, which is why the show has been able to last for so long, because with each new personality, they're able to tell new stories. And they also... Go ahead.
Sorry. I said, I think it keeps the show relevant as well, because the main character changed. You don't have this forced personality that they have to have, you know, for 60 years. They change, even though they have their memories and the core of them is essentially the same person. You know, their personality changes.
Yeah. And, like, they're not just traveling in the box, just seeing things. Like, they have to deal with different, like, aliens and monsters are sometimes humans who are trying to destroy the Earth or other parts of the universe. And the Doctor, they typically don't use guns, but they try to first try to reason with whoever is the wrongdoer, but then they find a way to stop things. And the doctor has this cool little thing called, like, a sonic screwdriver that they use, like, I guess it does everything but wood.
Would be the there's best no way wood setting.
Yeah, there's no wood setting, but it could do a lot of different things. So, you know, hopefully, like, if you're listening and, like, you've never heard of Doctor Who, hopefully you'll check it out. It is on Disney Plus now. Well, at least for new specials, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But I think all the episodes from when the show came back in 2005 are on HBO Max. And then, I guess, like, the classic Who episodes are on BritBox or your local I feel like the library does, depending on what library you're at, you may be able to find some DVDs and watch some of those classic ones. But you don't have to, like, you can start wherever you want to start. But I think it takes, like, it would take probably, like, a month or so. Like, if you were to watch, like, an episode every, or a couple episodes every day or something like that. Just because it's just so many.
Yeah, it would take a while. My husband and I always do a rewatch ahead of Gallifrey 1. We start with Rose, which is always where I recommend people start. Because if you start at the beginning, some people are going to be like, what am I watching?
That's fair. But I that is a good place to start. But I always feel... I feel for, like, the classic watchers that they want to talk about things that happen. Or sometimes they'll mention it in the show, and I'm like, what is that? And it's like, well, I want to learn more about that. So I'm trying to, make myself watch a little bit more. I've seen a few of the classic ones, but not all of them. So you can't, maybe kind of already answer this, but if you can go into a little bit more detail, why do you love this show?
So that's complicated, right? Because it's a complicated show.
Yeah.
I grew up hearing, I can't believe you're a Doctor Who fan. You're not a Doctor Who fan. And it was really just because I was born in the 80s, so it wasn't super accessible. I remember the random episode that would show up on PBS, you know, late at night, and be like, oh, what is this? But it was not something you could just sit down in front of your TV on a weekly basis and watch when I was growing up. So, but I had heard that all of my life, like, you love Star Trek, you love Star Wars, you are tailor-made for this show, you need to watch Doctor Who. So when the new Who era began, I was like, okay, I'm going to sit down and finally watch this show that everyone's going to tell, that's been telling me, I'm going to love it. And I did. I absolutely fell in love with it. It speaks to not only my love of sci-fi, but it speaks to my love of travel and adventure. You know, I've always loved science. I've always loved to travel and experience new cultures and new places and new foods. And all of that is just embodied in Doctor Who. Even though he is a character who has, well, now lived thousands of years. I'm not quite sure how many years we're up to right now. Yeah. But he still has that passion and excitement every time he goes somewhere new. And I'm like, wow, if we could just all, you know, capture that feeling in our own lives of excitement and wonder and willingness to learn and experience new people and places, like, oh, how much better off would everything be?
Yeah.
And it's always just resonated with me, I think, for those reasons. And it's so well written. You know, it's inclusive and it's heartwarming and it's got great messages. You know, for all ages, it's something, you know, your entire family can sit down and watch. It's something you want to share with your friends and your loved ones. You want to be like, oh my gosh, you need to watch this show. Okay. Like, you're not going to like the special effects at first, but it'll get better. Like, it's fine. Just stick with it. Bear with me.
Yeah.
It's really just a show you just want to share with everybody because it's heartwarming. You know, in a way that I think a lot of sci-fi isn't, you know, like, mm-hmm. I think when a lot of people think of sci-fi, they specifically think of Star Trek technobabble, and Doctor Who is ultimately about people and making connections with people, but it's still got that wonderful sci-fi element and space and time travel. It's everything a nerd could want all in one show.
Okay. Yeah, I like your answer. I feel like you are going to get a slightly different answer from each person when you ask them, like, why they like that show. It'll be just certain things that really resonate with you. So here's the question every Whovian gets asked. Who is your favorite doctor and companion and why?
Oh, there's so many now. This used to be such an easier question.
It's okay to have like a top two or three. It's
okay, because I do. I have like a top two for both. I was like, oh, killed me to narrow it down. I'll start with companions. I'm going to say probably my top two favorite companions are Donna and Martha. And while it was really hard for me to cut out Amy, like, it hurt my soul, I had to pick Donna and Martha because both of them really resonate with me and my personality. Martha, because, like, she's a professional woman. She has a career. She's intelligent. She's logical. I felt like she was such a good match for the doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, like the doctor and a doctor traveling together. How wonderful is that? And to have a person of color in the TARDIS, that was amazing. I really love Martha. I loved her, no spoilers, but Woman Who Walked the Earth storyline. That was so powerful. And then Donna, because Donna was so amazing, but with the exception of the specials, which we'll talk about, she really believed she was not important. And she had such a huge impact. You know, the doctor's like, you know, people across the stars will sing about her name, but inside she never felt like she mattered.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's so many of us that feel that way. We feel so small, you know, in today's world. That, and she's, you know, she's sassy and she's got a mouth on her, and so do I. So, so those, I had to narrow it down. So those were my top two for companions. Sorry, Amy, still love you. And then for the doctor, oh, this was so hard. I know 10 is a popular choice, but he definitely made the cut. I fell in love with him. You know, from the second he stepped on the screen, David Tennant just had my heart as the doctor, in a way that other regenerations maybe didn't. Maybe just had like a little bit of a curve, like, oh, they're the doctor. Okay, I have to make an adjustment. I never had to make an adjustment with Tennant. I loved him from the first time he stepped on screen. And you can feel his love of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
You know, through every second that he plays the Doctor, it's there. His love of the character, his love of everything Doctor Who, and his knowledge of Doctor Who really comes through in his performances. And he's just a phenomenal actor. I've seen him in other things as well. Mm-hmm. And then also who made the cut, doesn't get a lot of screen time, but I picked my girl, the Fugitive Doctor, played by Jo Martin. I love her in unreasonable ways. Yeah. Again, from the second she was on screen, I loved her. I want her own spinoff. I want 6 seasons in a movie. I know they just announced we're getting audio dramas with her. Not enough. Yeah. Still want TV time with Ms. Jo Martin because she was phenomenal as the doctor. I loved that she was something different. She had this more military feel, like, oh, this powerful female leader, and I just want to know everything about her. So
yeah, so like when in that episode, like, what was it like when it was revealed who she was? Like, did you like spit out whatever you had in your mouth or something? Or
I had this weird gut feeling, just because, you know, the way her and, you know, her companion, just their dynamic, it felt weird. It felt different. And I'm like, something's up. Something's up with this woman. She is not who we, you know, who meets the eye. And then, of course, the second we see the fob watch, I was like, I'm tossing things in the air. I'm like, what is happening? Who is she? What's going on? And then, she comes out as the doctor, and I'm like, I have questions. I don't care, but I have questions, and I need all the answers. Give me more of her. She was so dynamic and so powerful, and I know she was at Gallifrey One, so it was such a pleasure to meet her and be able to tell her how much her doctor meant to me. Because to have a middle-aged Black woman, as the doctor, who's, not a little itty-bitty, tiny, size zero, it was just this wonderful, wonderful representation in Doctor Who. In fact, I got the opportunity to speak to Chris Chibnall last year and tell him how much the Fugitive Doctor meant to me. And it's like, the companions always serve as like our window into the doctor. We're meant to see mm-hmm. ourselves in the companion. I never knew how much I needed representation in the doctor until we got the Fugitive Doctor. And I was like, oh, like Ten is still my doctor, but like she's also my doctor.
Okay. You can have more than one doctor. Yeah, I like your answers. Like, I am looking forward to seeing like more of the Fugitive Doctor and just to know more of her storyline. I've said this before, like, I don't have any tattoos, but like if I were into getting tattoos, I would have a lot of Doctor Who ones, and I would have the quote on my arm somewhere that says like, follow the light, break the glass.
Nice.
From that episode. But it's just like, if you get tattoos, that's one that you can use, because I don't like paint.
Yeah, I don't have any tattoos either, but I'm like, oh, if I got anything, it would probably be the Gallifrey One carpet.
I know you're serious.
I am. The carpet. Yeah, I know mm-hmm. other people listening to this are like, what? Why are they talking about carpet?
Yeah,
the whole thing. It's a whole subculture. We'll get there.
We're segueing into Gallifrey One, Miracle on 34th Street. So last year, it was my first year ever going to a Doctor Who convention like this. And I went there not knowing anyone personally. And I think, like, you were one of the first, I met you on that Friday. I think it was at a panel. And you and your husband were just like so nice to me, and was just like telling me different things, explaining the carpet to me. Cause like I saw someone wearing carpet, and I'm just like, I don't remember that from the show. What is that from? And like you explained it to me. So like tell everyone about the carpet.
So the convention has been at the LAX Marriott for years. I do not know how old the carpet truly is. I'd like to think it's been there forever, right? But the carpet was this quirky mishmash of patterns and circles and swirls and squares and all of these beautiful, bright colors. Like Punky Brewster would love the carpet. The carpet uh-huh. quirky. And then one year, the Marriott's like, we're redoing the hotel, like, and we're replacing the carpet. And everyone was like, no, you can't replace the carpet. Like, we love the carpet. They ended up auctioning off sections of the carpet. There's merchandise. I bought a carpet themed shot glass this year at Galley. Everyone loved that carpet. It came to just embody, I think, the beauty and the quirkiness and all of mm-hmm. the differences coming together and making something oddly beautiful. And, the carpet represented us. And so when it changed, it was a very, very sad moment for us. And so people started dressing up as the carpet. And there's carpet-themed items now. There's entire shops where you can buy hats and bags and clothes and underwear, like anything you can imagine in the Gallifrey One carpet pattern. Like, we are serious about our carpet. Like, there's somebody who comes to Gallifrey One, like, she dresses up as the carpet like every year. Mm-hmm. The carpet still exists in this one service corridor. And so it's fun to always, it's like visiting an old friend, like, yeah, the carpet still exists. Because the new carpet's just not quirky. It's just not quirky. And it's funny because I was looking at photos every year during Gallifrey 1. I like to look at photos of past galleys. And there's a noticeable difference in the photos between old carpet and new carpet. And I think it's just because of the colors of the old carpet. Mm-hmm. There's this beautiful warmth to all of the old photos that just, it makes the photos just feel vibrant. And I'm like, it's not there in the new photos. And I'm like, it's the carpet. It's the colors. It's, you know. So, yeah, there's a whole carpet subculture at Gallifrey 1. And I like to take new people to see the old carpet when the doors happen to be open.
That was pretty cool. So, how many years have you been coming to this convention?
So, it's a guesstimate because it's been a hot minute, but I'm pretty sure we've been coming since 2015.
Okay.
Possibly 2014, but I'm at least sure of 2015.
Okay. Pretty cool. So, what brings you back each year?
It's the people. You know, it's not, I mean, yes, seeing the guests from the show and mm-hmm. meeting all of these people, that is also an amazing experience, especially since Gallifrey 1 is so small. You know, it's at the end of the day in the lobby and all of a sudden, like, somebody just walks up and you're like, oh, like, they're on Doctor Who. Or, you know, it's late at night and you get to talk to Chris Chibnall for an hour. Like, those are magical experiences. But even if there was not a single guest from the show, I would still go to Galley. And it's because of the connections that we have all made with each other. It really is this weird, quirky family reunion that happens every year. You know, and it was so hard during the year that we lost during the pandemic. Coming back that first year was just this sense of relief of like, oh, we're finally home mm-hmm. again. You know, like so many hugs, so many tears. It's the people and the connections that you make, you know, whether you meet somebody because you were on a panel with them or, you know, somebody just stopped you in the hallways to say, hey, I like your cosplay, and you end up talking, or, you know, you spend 3 hours standing next to them in an autograph line waiting for Chris Eccleston. you make these wonderful connections and they become people who are such integral and important part of your lives, you know, whether they live across the country like you or, you know, mm-hmm. they live a couple hours down the freeway. There's really important, amazing people that go to Galley, and they keep me coming back year after year. It's already on my calendar for next year.
Yeah. When I first heard about the convention, I looked it up and it was like, oh, it's around your birthday. It seems like it's always around your birthday. And I was like, well, maybe I'll go just 1 year. Because, like, why would I want to go to this convention every year for my birthday? Like, come on. But I went there, and I'm just like, I'll just try it out. I'm going to get to meet Jodie Whittaker. And, you know, one and done. Maybe I might come again. Maybe not. But I had such a great time there. I actually did a panel for the first time there. And just, like, all the people that I got to meet. Some people I had been following online for years. It made me want to come back, and then, like, coming back with a little bit more knowledge and, like, seeing you guys again, like, it does feel like coming home. And last year and this year I had to leave early because, like, my younger kid, they are in choir, and they did, like, a magical feast, which they always do it President's Day weekend too. Next year they'll be a senior, so next year will be my last year not being able to stay the entire convention, and I'll just have to get on that red eye and go back to Illinois and drive home. But yeah, I love coming back, and I'm just, like, looking forward to just, like, returning and just being with friends. So, yeah, I like your answer.
That feeling when you walk into the lobby, it's just like, I made it. It was a long mm-hmm. road, but I made it back.
Yeah. So, you talked a little bit about your cosplay. Like, tell us a little bit more. Like, how, like you said, you started getting into cosplay. with Doctor Who? Has it morphed into other things, or do you primarily just like do good Doctor Who stuff?
I would definitely say Doctor Who is probably like my main cosplay fandom. Mm-hmm. However, at the last celebration, I did branch out into Star Wars cosplay. Which was Star Wars was probably my first fandom as a child. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely a lifelong dream. So I went from no Star Wars cosplays to like Princess Leia cosplays. Okay. So that kind of exploded overnight on me. so yeah, like I definitely will be bringing out more Star Wars cosplays, and I have a laundry list of things that I would love to do as far as cosplay. Mm-hmm. But I keep coming back to Doctor Who because I don't want to say it's easy, because it's not easy, especially like, you know, as a fat person, it's not easy to find cosplay. You can't just go online and order something and be like, yeah, it's gonna fit. But I think because of so much of Doctor Who, it's like it's clothes. Mm-hmm. I keep kind of stumbling into things that just work. Like my Martha cosplay, I was watching, you know, the Smith and Jones episode, and I'm like, that's a lab coat, a teal shirt, and black pants. I own a teal shirt. I can find a lab coat. Boom. You know, I was actually gifted a, I was gifted a Martha Jones ID. I have the one from her hospital, and then I also have a unit badge. Both gifted to me by people at Gallifrey One who saw my costume and were like, you need a badge to go with this. Yeah. So yeah, like definitely low barrier to entry. Like if you can find, you know, things in your closet that just kind of match up well. This year I did the 15th Doctor. I stumbled into that on accident. Got an email from Torrid. They were like, hey, we're having a clearance. And I'm like, I've got a Torrid credit card. Make poor life decisions. Let's see what's happening on the Torrid clearance rack. I found this suit. And I'm like, that is suspiciously like the 15th Doctor's outfit. Yeah. Not exact, but it's so close that who cares? It on clearance. Ordered it. Yeah. Like a week before Gallifrey One, I was like, gonna find myself an orange sweater, like done. So I think that Doctor Who is great for people who are maybe timid about cosplay or worried about things like screen accuracy, because there's so much that's just clothing, and you will be recognizable within the fandom. You don't have to spend $1,000 on this custom made screen accurate cosplay. You can, but you don't have to. And so for me, it's been this perfect fandom to express, you know, that kind of artsy side of me. I started out with the exploding TARDIS dress that I designed and made on my grandmother's sewing machine. And from there, it's expanded. I now do 3 Doctors. I do the 13th Doctor, the Fugitive Doctor, and the 15th Doctor. I do Martha Jones and Amy Pond. And I also have a Liz 10 and Sibylline Oracle cosplay as well. So, yeah, I've got quite a few. But it's definitely a fandom I recommend people getting involved with if they like cosplay and they want to be in a fandom that is going to welcome you no matter what your cosplay level ability is, whether you want to buy something, thrift something, sew something, or you're just really good with a hot glue gun.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to be excited to see you.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, you've done panels in the past, and you did one this year that I was happy that I was able to attend and see. I sat in the front row.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about that panel?
So this year's panel was actually a follow-up to last year's panel. My friend Lori and I got together. We did a double date with our husband and went out to dinner, and she does a lot of conventions, and we were talking about how when there are discussions of diversity at conventions or just in general, the one demographic that really seems to get left out of the discussion is size diversity. And, you know, it's socially acceptable still to bully fat people. And we really wanted to bring that discussion to the cosplay world because there's so much hate that you get when you're a fat cosplayer. And to be a cosplayer is to put yourself out there. It's really to be vulnerable. It's to put your art and your body out there in a way that really just opens you up to a lot of hate. And we're like, we need to have these discussions and talk about the things that we go through. And we're like, let's do it. So we put together the panel that we did last year called Breaking the Stigma, Fat and Fabulous Cosplayers, where we talked about the things that as fat cosplayers that we face, you know, the way society perceives us, the way we get treated in fandom, the difficulties that we have, the way we feel when we're trying to put together a cosplay and things don't go right. And so a lot of the feedback that we got from that panel, which was very highly attended, was that we would like to have a panel where we talk about, like, how are you overcoming these barriers to entry as far as cosplay? Like, what are you doing when you can't afford $1,000 custom cosplay? How, you know, when you go to the thrift store and you can't find anything in your size, like, how are you overcoming, you know, these barriers that we hear in other cosplay panels, like, oh, well, this is how you do it. That's not always accessible. When I sew from a pattern, I have to alter that pattern because most patterns don't go up to my size. So we're like, okay, well, let's talk about that next year. So Lori and I talked and we talked to some of the people who did our panel last year, and I said, let's do the, what did we call the panel? Cosplay for Marginalized Bodies, because there is a lot of overlap between body size and disability. So put together the proposal, and that was our topic this year. So we approached it from the standpoint of, we are in these bodies that the world does not design for us. In fact, one of our panelists this year told a heartbreaking story about how someone was like, I don't have the room to make a cosplay for you. As if, you know, like, she didn't have room in her house for that much fabric. Like, it's just the ridiculousness. People literally will refuse to make things for you. Or refuse to get you measurements. And so we really wanted to help people who have an interest in cosplay figure out, how do I do this for my body in a way that I'm comfortable? And, you know, what are my workarounds? So we got a lot of great tips from the panel. We got a lot of great tips from the audience. Yeah. I think it was a really good and productive discussion, because I think there was a lot of lack of understanding when the cosplay discussion comes up, that, like, oh, well, here's your list of things that you can do to cosplay. And it's like, okay, those will not work for everybody. So we definitely wanted to center larger bodies, people who are full-time mobility aid users. We didn't have anyone on the panel who experienced limb loss, but would love to include people like that in the discussion as well. And it's something that, you know, this is a discussion we look forward to taking to other conventions and, of course, expanding the discussion next year. So,
really good
discussions.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that session and just, like, learning. I feel like a lot of times when it comes to, like, marginalized groups, other people will try to speak on their behalf about, like, you know, what is acceptable, what they like and stuff. I've said it here before, but, like, my oldest is autistic, and for years, like, I learned in school, like, you're supposed to say a person with autism. You're supposed to use first person language. But then as I followed autistic adults, they were like, no, you can call me autistic. Like, this is who I am. And I've just been trying to learn from them and checking myself and making sure I'm not making my child and her being autistic being like my personality. Like you see like some parents out there like that, where it's like everything they post is just like, woe is me, this is my life as a child. Like
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I take that example, and with like anything that if like I'm not a part of that community, I want to like listen more than talk. So I was really happy to be there and just like proud to see you just share things about yourself and just being vulnerable like that. And I know you talked about briefly like your Star Wars cosplay, and you talked about the one Princess Leia one where you were on the red carpet and how happy it made you, and it made me emotional because I remember seeing it on Facebook, and all I saw was just how beautiful you were and how happy you were, and I didn't even think about like what went behind it or like what that meant to you on a much like higher level. So thank you so much for sharing that.
It's funny you bring that up, because that actually is in my Facebook memories. The dress, that was a whole thing. It was actually today in 2020 that I found the dress, and it was for the Princess Leia senatorial outfit. You know, ceremonial outfit at the end of the original Star Wars. It's a Torrid wedding dress. Mm-hmm. And of course, 2020, that was the year everything got canceled, and I didn't have the money to buy a wedding dress, right? Like, I'm not getting married.
Yeah.
And by the time Celebration was rescheduled, that dress had been discontinued. I found my exact size on, I think it was Mercari, and got it shipped to me. Like, everything just worked out perfectly to where I was able to do that cosplay. Like, it was just this beautiful lining up of events, and it was definitely something I needed as a cosplayer to experience, because you know, well, ultimately I do it for myself because I'm artsy and I love it. The feedback and the reception that I got with that cosplay was just next level.
Yeah. Yeah, you were definitely beautiful in that dress.
Thank you.
On the red carpet. So, other than like your panel, what were the other highlights of this year's conference for you?
Oh, there's always so many. I mean, honestly, just getting to be with friends is the highlight of my year. But I did have one really good interaction, and it was actually after Galley ended. Jay Griffiths, she plays a couple of characters in Doctor Who. She was Jack in a unit member in Magician's Apprentice, and then I believe she's another character in the audiobooks. I haven't listened to them, sorry. I watched a panel in the main auditorium with her on the last day, and it was the women, you know, the women guests who were all on this panel and talking about different things in the industry and their experiences. And she brought up how women of color are paid less. And it was an interesting reaction from some of the other panelists. And I could feel her frustration and her passion about what she was talking about. And I ran into her at the end of the convention. She was heading into dinner, and I wanted to just stop her briefly. And I said, thank you so much for the things that you said on that panel. And she got all fired up, and I love speaking to other passionate women.
Yeah.
But I understand her frustration, because I'm a woman who works in a male-dominated field. You know, I know what it's like to be talked down to, talked over, to be belittled, to be paid less than your male counterparts. And, you know, as a woman of color, we're paid even less, generally speaking.
Yeah.
And that is something that should be common knowledge. It is 2024. Like, the internet exists. Like, this is not a secret. It's across multiple industries. And I thanked her for bringing it up. And I said, I could feel how frustrated you were at the reaction by some of your fellow panelists. And we talked about that. But I told her the main reason I wanted to thank her was because we need to have these conversations at conventions. You know, in a place like Gallifrey One is the perfect place to have these conversations. But when we started trying to have conversations about, you know, empowered female characters and, you know, diversity, most conventions wanted to put us at like 8 o'clock at night, you know, when everybody's tired going to dinner or everybody's ready to let their hair down and party. And, you know, trying to get people to your panel was difficult. And I told her, when you bring these things up as an invited guest, it makes it so easier for us to continue the conversation as fans. You know, so I thanked her because, I've seen the effect that the invited guests bringing up these difficult topics, these emotional topics, these uncomfortable topics. I've seen the results, even though like they may not be there the next year to see the follow-up conversation. I've been a part of the follow-up conversations that we have had, and they are so necessary and so important. So I wanted to let her know, like, yeah, you were frustrated in the moment, and I feel your pain, like, I'm a Black woman. I get it. But, like, we're going to continue these conversations. You know, like, we're you know, we're here to have these uncomfortable conversations, even if people may not, you know, want to have them. We're going to, you know, we're continuing the fight, whether you're here to see it or not. And, you know, she got emotional and we hugged and we took a photo together. she was like, can I hug you? And I'm like, absolutely. Yeah. So that was just such a wonderful experience to be able to make these, you know, connections with people that you otherwise wouldn't be able to, and let them know, like, yes, this is their profession. This is their job. This is their art. But it's having real world impact on us, even if you're not there to see it. So that was a big highlight of my year, even though it wasn't a long interaction. It was definitely one I'll remember for a long time.
That is a really great memory. Thank you for sharing that. For me, it was definitely, so I decided to do a TARDIS talk this year. And I gave this different examples of ambiguous loss in Doctor Who, and like to look out in the audience and see like people that I've met last year at the conference who are now my friends, and even people who were at the People of Color meetup that we had on, I think it was Friday, and they just said like, hey, what panels and things are you guys doing so we can try to support. And I let them know what I was doing. And there was a group of them who were like in the audience, like supporting me. And it just meant so much to have them there. Just like my family couldn't be there. But like things like that. So that was like definitely a highlight for me. And I got a lot of great feedback on that. I'm eventually gonna like put like my presentation like on video and share it. Cause like people have been asking me about it. Like, oh, it seems like really interesting. So yeah, I'll do that. And then singing Defying Mavity.
That was amazing. I was like, if you do not say Mavity, I'm going to flip this table.
Oh, I know you were serious too. But, but yeah, that was a lot of fun. And like when I picked the song, I didn't even click until after. I'm like, wait, Gravity? Mavity? I have to say Mavity, don't I? So,
yeah.
I don't know if anyone's gonna be able to sing a song with that word in it at karaoke there at night without saying Mavity. I guess at least until they eventually change it back. I don't
will
know.
They though? I don't know. I assume nothing.
Yeah, like maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, that was amazing. I was so sad I missed your TARDIS talk. It was on my schedule and I just couldn't make it. It's so hard. There's so much at Galley going on, even though it's not a large convention. I add so much stuff to my schedule and I'm like, I know I'm not going to be able to do half of these things, but I'm going to try.
Yeah, I mean, there were other panels that people that I knew were on that I couldn't make either. And I'm like, I hope they don't think it's personal. Like, but there's always next year, like, I'll try to do something next year And then maybe you can come to that. Like, but yeah, I wasn't upset. Because, like, I get it. And then some people were taking pictures. Like, the lines to see Alice Kingston were, like, super long. Like, I get it, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, it's hard. Because I, you know, like, I'm a part of different groups. Like, I'm a part of the LA Away Team Star Trek group. And they're like, hey, is anybody available to work a table? And I'm always like, I would love to, but, like, Galley is so complex. Like, I can never commit to anything because it's, like, between autographs and photos. Because my husband and I kind of have a tradition where we try to pair a cosplay to the photo that we're taking. Mm-hmm. And then we take the photo that we took and we get that autograph. So that's, like, our souvenir of the convention. And so, like, you just never know how long are we going to be in an autograph line? What time are the autographs going to be? Like, the full schedule doesn't even come out until, you know, a few days before the convention. And I always feel bad. Like, I can't commit to anything because I just, I don't know. I don't know what my schedule is going to be like. It's hard. There's always something you're going to miss at Galley, and it's sad. Like, I need a TARDIS to be able to be like, all right, now I'm going to go back in time and I'm going to hop into this program room and listen to this panel.
Yeah. So we're going to move from the convention and we're going to just talk about the most recent Doctor Who specials that are now on Disney Plus. So my first question with that is, out of the three 14th Doctor specials, which one did you like the most and why?
That is so hard. I agonized over this question because I'm like, I'm calling them the Trilogy of Trauma. That's what I'm calling the three specials. I've titled them. Feel free to use it. I'm going to trademark it. Trilogy of Trauma.
Okay.
And I guess I'll have to explain why I'm calling it that. But I did eventually pick one, and I picked Wild Blue Yonder. And the reason I picked Wild Blue Yonder was it was this beautiful return to the creepy Doctor Who story. It just, it reminded me of so much of, like, those one-off monster of the week kind of feelings, like Silence in the Library or I can't remember the name of the episode, but when we were first introduced to the Weeping Angels, that just those chills that go down your spine of like, oh, this is scary. And it was such a unique episode because it was basically just the Doctor and Donna for the entire episode. Yeah, it was so good. It was so good. And seeing them switch back and forth between themselves and their doppelgangers. Sorry, spoilers. And to see that their relationship after having been apart, after Donna, you know, losing her memory, having them reconnect. And
yeah,
the Donna being, you know, she had such a great connection with the Doctor. And her being able to see, like, something's not right with you, my friend. Like, you got stuff going on. And I guess that's kind of why I call it the Trilogy of Trauma. I know a lot of people were like, oh, I don't understand why we can't go from Whittaker straight to Gatwa. And a lot of people were like, oh, this is just to appease the Tennant fanboys. And it's really not when you look at them. It's this beautiful trilogy. And it's the story of what happens when you do not deal with your trauma. You know, from the time the Doctor thinks he blew up Gallifrey all the way through Whittaker's run, there's a lot of sadness and loss and trauma that the Doctor goes through, and they do not deal with it. The Doctor is great at repressing things. And it was like this return to Tennant, this return to a familiar face. It felt like he finally had to stop and go back. It was like a regression. Like, no, you have to go back and you need to deal with your stuff, man. Like, before you can go forward, you need to go back and you need to process everything that you have gone through. And so that's why I'm calling it that Trilogy of Trauma, because it really was just the Doctor processing all of these heavy things that have happened to him from the loss of his best friends, you know, repeatedly over and over, to the timeless child storyline and finding out, like, who knows how many years of his of their past is just missing from their memory. Like, you can't go forward until you process this. And so I know a lot of people were kind of upset that we didn't, you know, go straight to 15. We got 14, The Return of Tenet again, but I think it was something that was really beautiful. And I think it had a really beautiful message for us too. It was like, you're going to have to stop. You're going to have to take care of yourself. You're going to have to do some self-care, and you're going to have to process the things that you've gone through in life. So I think it was a really beautiful message. But yeah, Wild Blue Yonder, like, it did that and so much more. It was so creepy. It was so well acted. The dynamics between them was so beautiful that even though I loved all three of the specials, it stood out in a way that really just, it felt like just a return to, you know, classic Doctor Who.
Yeah, I agree. I think all the specials were really good. And I like what you said about how they show, like, the 14th Doctor in that way. Because, like, I did have that concern that it was, like, they were trying to appease, like, the fanboys. Because, like, there are, I feel like there are some, like, toxic, like, Tenet fans who are like, oh, I left right after Tenet and stuff. But I see the current showrunner, Russell T. Davies, he's, like, he mentioned the flux. They're not acting like Jodie Whittaker's era didn't exist, which I really appreciate. And they are doing things that that fans have been like, oh, well, once he comes back, they're not going to do all that weird stuff and it'll be Doctor Who again. And he's just like, nope, sorry. You know? So
we're getting weirder.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, and I've never had the opportunity to meet Russell T. Davies. I did, you know, get to speak at some length with Chris Chibnall, and you know, said, I love how they've doubled down. They're like, oh, you don't like that the Doctor is a woman? Oh, well, guess what? Now she's a Black woman. Like, oh, you don't like the fact that the Doctor is a Black woman? Well, guess what? The Doctor's origin story was a small Black girl coming through a portal. Like, oh, well, you didn't like that either? Like, oh, Russell T. Davies is coming back. Like, sure, you got Tenet. Oh, but now that we've got Gatwa, like, we're doubling down on this. And if you don't like it, well, just stop watching. You know, and so many of the actors have come out, you know, and said, well, hey, if you don't like it, too bad. You know, and it makes you wonder, like, what show have you been watching? Because it's definitely not the one I've been watching.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you're doing. You're watching some bootleg version.
But, like, if I had to pick a favorite out of the three, because all three were good, I would say the Star Beast. Mostly because the interaction between Donna and her daughter. And the part that I laughed the most at was when we find out that the Meep was not what they appeared to be. And the Meep said something like, you and your weird child or something like that, or freak child, something like that. And the camera went over to, I'm about to call her by her real name and not the name on the show, but Donna's daughter. And, like, she, like, looked like, oh, Rose. Here we go. Because, like, she, Rose, right, Rose. And then she, like, kind of rolled her eyes like, oh, here we go. Because she knew her mom was about to snap. that this monster who just killed these other people was, like, mad that the Meep said something bad about her own baby. And, like, I just laughed so hard at that part. Because, like, I'm like, was that scripted for her to react that way, or was that just like an ad lib? But whatever it was perfect.
Oh yeah, I love those moments, because, like, I don't have children, but, like, I'm definitely protective of those I love. I'm one of those, like, oh, I will throw down with you. Yeah. So I love those moments, and I love seeing Donna's mother's growth as a character.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, that was so beautiful to see, from this kind of harsh, judgmental, criticizing person. I think their relationship really embodied the kind of difficult mother-daughter relationship. And to see that growth in her love and acceptance for her granddaughter, that was so beautiful. And the Meep, like, yeah, he's evil, but he's adorable. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's definitely a good choice.
So what are your thoughts on The Church on Ruby Road?
So I love the musical aspect. You know, I love musicals. So after I saw the Barbie movie, I'm like, hey, the doctor's in the Barbie movie. He can sing and dance. And then it was like, oh, he's gonna sing and dance in Doctor Who. That was, I loved it. I love that aspect of it. I like the Goblin song. I played that quite a few times when they released that track, before I'd even seen the show. I loved Cherry Sunday. I love her name. I loved her character.
Yeah.
Like, I want more of her. I hope she gets to travel in the TARDIS. Like, she just seems like such a wonderful character. But it raised a lot of questions, but it did feel like the quintessential Christmas special episode of where it's fun, it's wacky, it's quirky, and you just left with kind of this good, excited feeling, like, oh, I can't wait for the rest of, you know, rest of Gatwa's run to air. I just can't wait to see what they're gonna do next.
Yeah,
I didn't hear a lot of criticism about the episode.
Yeah,
how about you?
I loved it. Like, I've seen it a couple times. I think I saw it the other day again, just because, like, I really want new episodes. So I'm like, well, this is what I got, so I'm gonna watch it again. I love Shuti's smile, like how he looks at people. And, like, when that one former companion was, like, looked at him and was like, you're beautiful. It's, like, not just, like, face-wise. It seems like he just, like, has this, like, inner warmth to him that you're intrigued. You want to know more. You want to be around this person. So, I'm excited to see what's going to happen next. It'd be interesting to see more singing. But, like, I know, like, you can't do too much singing. Not everyone likes musicals. I get it. I love musicals. I'm always, so, who do you think Mrs. Flood is? Do you think this is just something extra that they added in, or is there some, like, deeper lore happening with Mrs. Flood?
You know, I'm torn. It's really interesting. Like, whenever there's a new character that we don't know who they are, like, I love watching the fandom go crazy. And, like, the one name that always comes back up is the Ronnie. And, like, that, of course, came back up. And I'm just, like, every time there's a new character, people are going to be, like, it's the Ronnie, like, until they're eventually right. But people were, like, Flood, Rain. Rain is just an anagram of Ronnie. I don't think she's the Ronnie. And then I also saw online, like, oh, floods involve water. What else has water? Rivers. Like, maybe it's River Song. And I'm, like, no, I don't think so. I kind of want her to be someone new, someone different. But at the same time, I was like, you know, kind of going back to, because I have watched some of the original Who. I've watched the first through, I think, most of the third Doctor's run. And at least what's available, what isn't lost to time. I almost want her to either be Susan.
I was thinking that
too. Or, like, Susan's daughter. Like, I don't know. I think they're doing this kind of return to a lot of the old faces in Doctor Who, which I love. And I don't know that she is. Like, she could be somebody just completely new that we don't know about. Like, she's going to, you know, kind of like how when they introduced River Song, her entire story was going to be in the future. It could be something like that. But I kind of want her to either be Susan or Susan's daughter and have that kind of circling back to the first Doctor and his family and filling in some of that story and having them meet the 15th Doctor. Big change, obviously. Because I think we did have that kind of short where the first Doctor looks at the 15th Doctor and they smile. And I'm like, wouldn't that be so beautiful to kind of bring it back around if it was either, like, Susan, a regeneration of Susan, or a descendant of Susan? Because, of course, we never got any confirmation whether or not Susan could regenerate or not. But I think that would be beautiful. But we'll have to see. I'm not married to the idea, but I think that would make me happy.
I just hope that it's not something like, oh, that's future Ruby because she got taken away from a weeping angel or something like that. That's what I hope does not happen.
Yeah, and I don't want her to be evil. Like, she seems so sweet. Like, I kind of don't want her to be evil, so. But I love that she broke the fourth wall like that. Like, what, that never was seen a cool. TARDIS before? I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Who are you, Mrs. Flood? I'm so intrigued.
Yeah. No, that was pretty cool. So what do you hope to see, or what would you not like to see with the 15th Dr. Shooty Gatwa's era?
That's difficult. I don't know that, like, I have specifics that I want to see, like specific storylines or specific eras, but I think what I would like to see is some balance, because especially during Chibnall's era, we really, and honestly, like, even back a little, they dealt with it a little bit with Bill. They really started to have these important discussions of, like, when you time travel, the color of your skin and your gender plays a huge role in how you're going to be treated and perceived.
Yeah.
And now, for the first time, the doctor is not going through life with privilege.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we saw it a little bit with Jodie, where, you know, but they didn't really tap into, I think, as much as they could have, as far as, like, well, she's a woman now, she's going to be talked down to a lot. Mm-hmm. But now I don't think it's something that they can avoid or skirt around, because the doctor is now a dark-skinned black man, and yeah. he is traveling with a little petite white girl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was enough to get you killed in some times and places.
Yeah.
It's honestly probably enough to get you killed today, unfortunately. And while I do not want just a series of, you know, like, reliving racial trauma.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely something I want to see them deal with in a realistic way, even if it makes the audience uncomfortable. Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, history is uncomfortable, and Doctor Who has always dealt with history, and it's time we deal with some of the uglier sides of human history, in a more direct way than just kind of the, like, okay, well, we're alluding to it, you know, like, by doing a parallel with this alien species, so you kind of know what we're talking about, but we're not going to really say what we're talking about. Yeah. I would like to see that happen during his era, but I also don't want it to dominate his era, where he just kind of becomes the Black Doctor, and, like, oh, so much trauma, because obviously, like, right, like, he regenerated into 14 to go to therapy, do, you know, as they say, like, we're doing rehab out of order, like,
mm-hmm.
He's getting into a healed state. You see his passion, that smile, like, oh, love it so much. But I want them to get real, you know? And I want it to feel like Doctor Who, too.
Yeah, I think that those are some excellent points. I feel like one of my gripes about, like, the 10th Doctor is, like, I felt like he didn't respect Martha in that sense when it came to, like, her race in different times. And even, I think everyone, like, loves that one lady that he fell in love with when he had the, when he had to be a human with the Family of Blood episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, everyone's like, oh, what's such a lovely love story. And, oh, I felt sorry for her in the end. And I couldn't believe that, like, the doctor wanted her to travel with him and Martha, knowing how she felt about people like Martha, and, like, he wasn't even going to ask Martha, and it always left, like, a bad taste in my mouth, but then, seeing Peter Capaldi, how he, like, punched that racist dude in the face, I'm like, yes!
Yes!
Yeah.
Yeah, so Gatwa can't do that. That'll be a whole different story.
Yeah. But, yeah, like, I feel like they can do, like, a good job, like, and it would help, like, maybe he had, you know, someone who wasn't a middle-aged white guy in the writer's room, helping them, like, write these stories where we can be honest, but it's not like a Tyler Perry movie, and I'm just like, oh my god, the trauma, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah, you don't finish the episode, like, and I'm gonna go cry now. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to talk to my therapist about this episode this week.
Right. Yeah. I don't want it to be like that at all. And I feel like they do a good job at presenting him as a doctor. He's not, I don't know how they do it in the UK, but like I know like in the US for a long time, when it'd be like a black person, they would be like so stereotypical and like, what it is, blood? And or like trying to like sound like hip or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what that sounds like in the UK. Like there was this British guy who recently put up these like videos on social media saying how Americans think black people in the UK talk, and he like had like this really squeaky voice and like, ew! Like he was like doing a robbery, and then he was just like, I'm going to have to take your funds from you, and then he's like, you shot to get a shitting, and I'm like, that's not how they talk. But like he was like wearing like these like urban clothes, like talking like that, and using like Harry Potter magic and stuff to like steal from some, because like they don't have guns there, which I thought was funny. Like I don't think that's how we think they talk in the UK, but
no. I mean, at least not those of us who grew up watching, you know, British television on PBS, you know, like,
yeah,
we know they don't talk like that.
Yeah,
yeah, it's interesting because he's so colorful, you know, he's got more outfits, I think, just that his season hasn't even aired, and I've seen more outfits than any other doctor.
Yeah.
So I think there is probably this concerted effort to show that maybe he's got to blend in a little bit better. And also, like, maybe not, you know, stereotype him or put him in this box. Well, ironic, man in a box.
Yeah.
But put him in this small box of like, okay, well, this is all you are and can be. I don't know. I feel like I have faith in where the show is going. I don't know why. Yeah. Like I have a good feeling. I hope you do too.
I do too. I'm really excited just to see new episodes in May, and I don't know, maybe find some new cosplay for myself for next year. We'll see. But yeah, so we are coming towards the end of the episode. Would you like to promote anything? Like if you want to share like where people can find you? Like, I don't know if your stuff is public or not, but or if you want to like talk about like a cause or whatever.
So I'm definitely on social media. I'm on Threads, which I just kind of started posting on because, you know, I've abandoned the formerly known as Twitter. I can't handle it, but I'm on Threads. I'm on Instagram. I'm Jungle Cruise Muse. Cause I used to be a Jungle Cruise skipper. So that's where that came from. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, my friend Lori and I, she goes by Sassy Lassie Cosplay on Instagram. We definitely want to expand the discussion regarding size diversity and cosplay. So it's something that we're looking at bringing to other conventions, and we're trying to create a community of resources because there is such that difficulty when you're trying to cosplay, like how to find things, knowing, you know, what companies you can work with that will get you a reliable fitting item, which ones you don't want to work with. So that's going to be coming soon. Our next convention appearance is probably going to be San Diego WhoCon. So if you're local to the SoCal area, definitely check out San Diego WhoCon. We're going to be continuing those discussions. But if you want to follow me on social media, I'm at Jungle Cruise Muse. And that's probably where we're going to announce further developments as far as when we create the community. We definitely want, you know, the love and support of individuals to make sure that we are truly providing a welcoming cosplay space for all people who come to these conventions, or people who may feel timid putting themselves out there for the first time as a cosplayer. We want to make sure that they have the appropriate resources and support so that way they don't go through the same journey that we did as cosplayers. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably be announcing that on our social media once we get that nailed down. Our next appearance will probably be at San Diego WhoCon. So, I'm Jungle Cruise Muse. She's Sassy Lassie Cosplay. So yeah, check both of us out on Instagram and look for more things coming as far as marginalized bodies in the cosplay space.
All right. Thank you. So you guys can find me on Facebook at Quirky Pop, Instagram, Quirky Pop Podcast. I lurk on Twitter. I mostly just go on there to find like friends who still are on there, because they're not anything else, and I may like post like updates here and there, but I'm try to be mostly on Threads. But on Threads, I'm Katrina T. Parker. Katrina with a C. I thought about that. I'm like, they may be looking for a K. It's Katrina with a C. But yeah. So you guys can find me there. Like I said, hopefully within the next week or so, I'll have that video of me just doing my Ambiguous Loss talk. Because like, I felt like it like resonated with different people in different ways. So, I want to kind of share it to a broader audience. I want to thank my guest, Audra, for being on here with me. It was just, like, right after that, I was just like, hey, you going to be on my show? And she's just like, oh, okay, let's do it. So, like, I really appreciate you and just, like, how, like, kind, like, you and your husband have been to me over this last year, being new into this Gallifrey One family. And, I love following you, and I can't wait to see you again next year.
I know. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, when you messaged me, I was like, I've never done a podcast before. Let's do it. So thank you so much for thinking of me and inviting me. It's nice to connect with all of my galley fam outside of galley.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listeners, thank you, and we will see you next time.
Bye.